And this segment of the program, we're going to talk with Congressman Al Green of the 9th District of Texas. Good morning, Congressman, and welcome to the program.
Good morning. It's an honor to be on the program with you, and I must start with an apology for a slight snafu that we had. I'm very regretful of it, and I look forward to making up for it.
Oh, very good. So we're going to ask double the questions.
All right. That means that everybody will get to vote for me twice.
All right. Okay. And, of course, our phone number is 713-390-5102. 713-390-5102. Well, Congressman, as always, we never have enough time. So just to make sure we cover what I think to be the most important topics this morning, I'm going to outline them at the outset. We'd like to talk about the Operation Voter Education Program that you have.
Absolutely.
Also, the minimum wage proposal has been in the news. We'd like to address that.
Yes.
And, of course, the elephant in the room is Syria.
I think you've selected three excellent topics, and I look forward to jumping right in.
Okay, let's talk about Operation Voter Education. I was on this air yesterday. I was commenting about how folks need to get registered because we're going to be going to the polls in about 13 months. But I realized after I got off the air, we've got primaries coming up.
Yes, we do. And Texas has already implemented its photo ID law.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to start by doing this, however, Jay. It's important for the community to know how organized the elected officials are. We have united around Operation Voter Education, which is to make sure that every person who wants to vote will be able to vote in the upcoming elections, not just the next election.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to do this to give the names of persons. It's important for people to know that we work together. Congressman Gene Green, Congresswoman Jackson Lee, State Senator Rodney Ellis, State Senator Sylvia Garcia, Senator John Whitmire, Representative Alma Allen, Representative Jessica Farrar, Representative Ron Reynolds, Representative Mary Ann Perez, Representative Sinfonia Thompson, Sylvester Turner, Gene Wu, City Councilwoman Adams, Houston City Councilperson Larry Green, Missouri City Councilperson Don Smith. This is important because too often we are not seen as unified around a common goal, and we are unified. Now, to the substantive portion of this, the Supreme Court has ruled that Section 4 was unconstitutional, which eviscerates Section 5, which was a coverage area, and Texas was one of the areas covered under the Voting Rights Act. Doesn't mean that other parts of the Voting Rights Act are not constitutional, but what it does mean is this, is that Texas has concluded that it can go forward, and it can go forward with elections requiring a photo ID. Now, what does this mean for you and me? It means that when I show up at the polls, when we show up at the polls, in addition to a voter registration card, which we will likely have,
mm-hmm.
You will have to have a photo ID.
Right.
If you show up with your voter registration card, and if you've been voting at that precinct all of your life,
and
everybody knows who you are, you do not have a photo ID, you will not be permitted to vote. You have to assume that that's the case. Now, you can cast a provisional ballot, and then you'll have to bring your ID back within 6 days. But the question is this, how many people will cast a provisional ballot and then get back to the clerk's office with that photo ID, the necessary documentation to show that I am indeed who I say I am, such that my vote may count? It's exceedingly important that we know what the acceptable forms of ID are. So let me quickly share with you the acceptable forms of ID. A Texas driver's license. Students, if you're out of state and you've been voting in Texas and you've been using an out-of-state driver's license, you will not be able to cast a valid ballot. Mm. You will have to get a Texas driver's license. I know this to be the case because we had a town meeting and we had a student from California's driver's license, doing quite well, voting, participating, doing what we expect young people to do. That person will not be able to vote in an upcoming election unless he secures a Texas driver's license or a Texas election identification certificate. Mm. Now, the Texas election identification certificate, you can only secure only if you don't have some of the other acceptable forms of ID. So if you don't have any of the other acceptable forms, and I'll go through the rest of them, then you can get this Texas election identification certificate. So if you've got a California driver's license, that's not valid in Texas. So you can get the Texas election identification certificate because you don't have a valid Texas driver's license. That won't cost you anything. Doesn't cost you anything. It's valid for 6 years, something that you should acquire if you don't have the other forms of identification, which include a Texas personal identification card. So if you're a person who doesn't drive a car, but you want identification, you can get what's called a Texas personal identification card. The Texas concealed handgun license is acceptable. I know we've had the argument, why can't a student ID card be utilized when a Texas concealed handguns license can? That's a great debate to have, but we have passed that debate now. Hmm. We're on to trying to make sure that we can get everybody registered properly and identified properly so that they can vote. I bemoan what the Supreme Court did. I think what the state is doing is invidious, but I find myself in a position where I have to make sure people are allowed to vote, because in a close election, the tide can be shifted by virtue of this new law.
Which was probably the purpose of the law to begin with.
Well, there are many reasons why it could be the case. And again, I'm trying to stay away. And I appreciate you. You're a lawyer, very scholarly person. Your intuition is superb, supreme. And I appreciate all of this. But what I want to do is make sure I get the message out this morning that we must get ready for this election that's coming up. United States military identification card is acceptable. A United States passport is acceptable. United States citizenship certificate is acceptable. Some people are going to show up at the polls. They won't have the proper identification. Then they'll have 6 days to go out and get that identification. Mm. To get some form of identification will require a birth certificate. If you don't have your birth certificate, you have to then get with the proper agency to get that, and that can take days. Mm. So there will be literally people who won't have enough time to secure the proper identification. This is why we're starting now in the month of September to try to get this done before we get to the month of November, November 5th, which is when the election takes place. You can also vote early. If you vote early, you can vote early with an absentee ballot. And you don't have to have identification. I know this is quite enigmatic. It is almost oxymoronic to understand what we're having to deal with. But you can vote early with an absentee ballot, and you don't have to have these forms of identification. But you can only vote early if you are willing to declare that you will not be in the county during the period of early voting, and you won't be in the county on election day. So if you're not going to be in the county on election day, and you're not going to be here during the early voting period, you can declare this, and you can vote by absentee. There are ways to do this and do it properly, but I'm not going to encourage anybody to break the law. I encourage people to vote absentee if you're not going to be in the county. But if you are, I'm going to suggest that you get the proper identification so that you can vote early and get your vote counted.
Or if you're planning to leave the county on election day, then you can plan to vote early.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And I encourage people to vote early, because when you wait until election day to vote, you find yourself with inclement weather, car doesn't start.
Hurricane.
Friends need your help for something, emergency. So we have to be careful and make sure that we vote as early as we can.
I'm glad we're talking about this, because I was under the impression, because the federal government, Attorney Eric Holder, is suing the state of Texas, or the Attorney General's office is suing the state of Texas, is currently to stop this voter ID process. I kind of thought everything was on hold.
Well, my hope is that the Attorney General will obtain injunctive relief. Injunctive relief would simply say to the court, there's a San Antonio court that's hearing a Section 2 case, mm-hmm. of which I am a part of. There's several cases, a VZ case, and then there's the voting rights case as well that's associated with redistricting. But the Attorney General has not gotten the injunctive relief yet. And if the Attorney General gets that, then it could be placed on hold. But I think we have to operate with all deliberate speed, to borrow a phrase, to make sure everybody is properly registered and properly identified so that you can vote.
And prepared and aware of what the issue is all about. So if you got the education, there's no reason not to get prepared. And if you're prepared, you don't have to worry about the barriers that may have been attempted to be put place in your way. The D.C. District Court said that, to their knowledge, the Texas law is the most stringent in the country. There is no other state that has laws as stringent as those here in Texas. So it's very important that we are prepared, that when we go to the polls, we won't be refused the opportunity to vote.
May I make three quick points?
Please.
One, there is no requirement that you have to register to vote. The Constitution does not require it. In fact, in the state of North Dakota, they proudly display on their website that you can vote in North Dakota and not be registered to vote. Mm-hmm. There is no requirement. So what Texas has done, it has caused a good many people to question why. Again, I've not gotten into the why of it, but you do have to speculate when you see Texas going to this great extreme. That's point number one. Point two, if this law is successfully implemented, it is estimated, guesstimated, prognosticated that as many as 800,000 people may be impacted. Mm-hmm. 800,000 across the length and breadth of the state. Many of them in counties where they don't have DPS offices such that they can go in and secure this identification that they will have to have. And the final point is this. If we are not vigilant and if we don't get this job done, a close election will be lost because people who actually are registered to vote but don't have identification will not have their ballots counted, which means that you'll have a legitimate person who has actually voted, but the ballot can't be counted because you didn't have the identification.
For want of a nail, a war was lost. And that from a poem in high school.
Absolutely.
81 counties in Texas don't have DPS offices. That's incredible. Let's go to line three and talk with Armand. You're on Sunday Morning Live with Congressman Al Green. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, sir.
Yeah. Hi. Yeah, I was caught a little bit of it driving home on the radio. And, you know, I agree with some points, and some points, you know, I don't necessarily agree with.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking as, you know, African-American minority, I do feel like there's obviously an underlying reason why Texas decided to go with this law. You know, I mean, I think anybody, you know, with any common sense can see, you know, the political ramifications of this law would have on unopposed. But the point that I do, let's get to the point that I do agree. I agree that there needs to be a bigger push as far as getting people registered to vote with or without this voter ID law. I think our voter turnouts are just extremely low. I think a lot of people just don't really, you know, pay close attention to what's going on with their politicians and state laws and whatnot. It's just basically ignorance. And when everything's said and done, you got the same people who sit there and complain every day about why this or why that.
Yeah. Okay.
Now, as far as the voter ID, now, it's just my opinion, but I think any, you know, citizen or any law-abiding, you know, taxpayer or whatnot should have some form of ID. I think that, you know.
Oh, but you make a valid point. I think everybody, I don't think anyone disagrees with you, some form of ID. You're correct. And everybody probably does have some form of ID. But the issue is the specificity with which they outline which ID you must have. And some common IDs, such as a student ID from a college, is not acceptable. Those are some of the things we were talking about, Armand. But thanks so much for your call. We appreciate you this morning. But yeah, everybody agrees with voter ID. We don't have an issue with that. But one of the things I thought was interesting, Congressman, is that the legislature was asked to make certain amendments that could make it easier for people, especially minorities without means to get registered. One was to waive all fees for indigent people who need documents to get a voter ID. They refused to consider that. Or to reimburse poor Texans who travel long distances to a DPS office. They didn't want to do that. They want to expand the range of acceptable ID at the polls to include student ID or Medicare ID cards. Medicare ID cards, you know, those are legitimate. They didn't want to do that. Or to reopen, or I should say the DPS offices to be open in evenings and weekends because people have to work.
This is a case of both what you're doing and how you're doing it. Let's deal with what we're doing first. It is not required that you have a photo ID. I happen to believe that it's a fair thing to require one,
yes.
But it's not required. North Dakota does not require a photo ID. If the precinct judge knows who you are, you get to vote, and you don't have to show any identification at all. There are people in Texas who've been voting at the same polling place since they've been voting, and they will not be permitted to vote, notwithstanding the fact that the precinct judge may be a relative. They won't be able to vote if they don't have a photo ID. So what we're doing, requiring the photo ID, can become suspect because of how we are doing it.
Right.
There are exceptions to all rules, and there should be some exceptions. And there are a few that I'll call to your attention here. But more importantly, let me mention the process. It is what we find so onerous and so invidious. The process of requiring it immediately. It's not being phased in over a year. It's not being announced today and will become effective a year from now. It is immediate. And the immediacy of it is what creates a good deal of consternation, because we have a good many persons who will need to get a birth certificate to get the proper identification. And when they seek to get their birth certificate, they will discover who they are. Many people are using a name that was given to them by a teacher in school, because when they pronounced their name, the teacher helped them to spell the name. So they went home with a spelling that the teacher gave to the student. And when you get your birth certificate, you're going to find out that your name is not spelled the same way.
Right.
The names, then you've got to reconcile a lot of things in your life at this point. You get your birth certificate. Now you've got to take that birth certificate to the proper agency. There'll be a long line. If you're a senior, you can get some preferential treatment. If you're not a senior, you're going to stand in line a long time. You've mentioned the many areas in the state where you don't have a DPS office. It's not just that there's a requirement of the photo ID. It's that it's being required that you have it immediately, if not sooner. So I find some reason to be suspect of why this is being done. But I will tell you this, regardless as to why they're doing it, we have to step up and get it done. Let's get the photo ID. Let's make sure every person can vote that's eligible. And let me say this to the lady that called. I consider her a religious person. If you have an objection to being photographed for religious reasons, it's important to note that you can get an exception if you have an objection. Now, it has to be something that you've been doing constantly, and you'll have to swear. You'll have an affidavit that you'll have to swear to and get this done. But you just can't show up on election day and decide that, you know, I don't like being photographed today.
Yeah, I don't want to be seen.
So you got it. It's got to be something that's been constant and consistent.
Okay, let's because of time, let's go ahead and segue into the minimum wage issue.
Yes.
Obviously, there's a move now to want to double the minimum wage. And while we understand that folks do need money to live on, the minimum wage is not really a livable wage for most people.
It is not. Let's hearken back for just a moment to the March on Washington in 1963. Number 8 of the 10 demands was to raise the minimum wage to $2 an hour.
About 50 cents back then.
$2 an hour. Well, if we adjust for inflation, that $2 an hour today would be $13.39, adjusted for inflation. $13.39. The minimum wage as currently implemented, $7.25 an hour. By the way, that's what the federal minimum wage is. In the state of Washington, it's more than $9 an hour. So you can have it more than the floor that the federal government establishes. But with the $7.25 an hour, a worker with one child will work 40 hours a week and will, over a year, make $15,080. $15,080. The poverty level for a worker with one child, as set by the federal government, is $15,130. $15,130. So you have a person working full time living below the poverty line. Mm. The minimum wage ought not be a poverty wage. Minimum wage ought to lift you out of poverty, not require you to work in poverty and be subsidized with food stamps, because you could get SNAP food stamps and still work full time.
I think there was one employer that was part of their employment benefits package. You can get SNAP. Well, I won't mention their name, but they're pretty big all over the country. But you know what? I remember I was a kid, and you know, I had a minimum wage job, and at one time it seemed that minimum wage jobs were primarily for kids.
Not anymore.
Right.
Not anymore.
So as a result,
Average person making a minimum wage is over 20 years of age.
Wow.
Over 20 years of age.
So
and
what
it's
about
not a transitional wage for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
That people, it's not a dynamic force in
They're
their lives.
In.
It's static
yeah.
for a good many people. Let me make this point, because it's important to note that America's not a poor country. One out of every 60 persons is a millionaire.
Mm.
One out of every 11 families, every 11 households is worth $1 million.
Wow.
It's important to note that we never talk about CEO wages mm-hmm. and how they will impact prices, because the argument is made that if you raise the minimum wage, you're going to raise the price. Well, a certain CEO got a bonus of $69.7 million. That is $9.3 a second, $9.30 a second. All right, you get $9.30 a second. Another one made $3 billion 1 year. That $3 billion is $400 a second. Now, if we can pay a CEO $400 a second and not complain about how that will impact prices, we can pay hardworking people at the lower end of the ladder $15 an hour. It's time to raise the minimum wage. It ought not be a poverty wage. It ought not be a subsidized wage. People ought to be able to work their way out of poverty. That's what the minimum wage ought to accord a person.
In 63, the average CEO made 18 times what the average worker made. Today, it's more like
50.
50?
More than 50 times.
I thought it was close to 100 times.
I know it's more than 50. The yeah. last number I saw was yeah. more than 50, and it probably has escalated, because the last time I looked at the number was a few years ago.
Yeah, it's amazing.
But it is. And it's important to note also quickly on this question of minimum wage. We're talking about people making $7.25 an hour. If you work in a restaurant and you work for tips, your wage is $2.13 an hour.
Wow.
$2.13 an hour.
We were doing that back in 1900.
$2.13 an hour. This is why we need to index the minimum wage. Index means attached to.
Mm-hmm.
We need to attach the minimum wage, index it to something. I propose we index it to poverty. There's a bill, H.R. 1010, which indexes it to the cost of living so that it would be properly adjusted. But we need to index it, because no one should work for $2.12 an hour. Someone would say, well, if you work in one of these fine restaurants, you'll get heavy tips. But what if you don't work in a fine
yeah.
restaurant?
And most people don't, by the way. And when you go out to eat, think about the server. You want to tip them a little bit more.
Yes, you should. I try to do that. But you also might remember this, too. If the food is lousy, don't blame the service, the person who's serving you. That person did not prepare the meal.
Just give them a note to take back to the cook.
Yes. And that that person is working for poverty wages, and we've got to raise the minimum wage.
We've got Congressman Al Green, 9th District of Texas, and we got one final area we're going to touch on, the issue of Syria. The president has recommended that we go in. These have some airstrikes, and Congress has the final word been heard with regard to where Congress stands on that?
Final word is still being debated. And if we can step back for just a moment, it's important to note a couple of things that are not being talked about.
Mm-hmm.
If the president had gone alone, and not come to Congress, that would have probably been an effort to impeach the president.
Mm-hmm.
There are people who believe they have enough votes to impeach the president. They just don't have a reason.
Mm-hmm.
So they're looking for a reason. They already have the votes. So they're looking for a reason. And it was very judicious, very prudent of the president to come to Congress before taking this initiative forward. There is something called the War Powers Act, which would have allowed the president to go in for 60 days if the president sees that there is some sort of imminent threat. And other presidents have used the War Powers Act. And by the way, you get a 30-day extension mm-hmm. Under the War Powers Act. This is something that was implemented when Richard Nixon was president. In fact, he vetoed the War Powers Act, and the Congress overrode his veto to get it done. The point is that 1973 is a significant date, because it gave the president the authority to do what he wants to do. But under these circumstances, I'm not saying that the president decided to come to Congress because he knew that impeachment might be imminent. I'm just telling you from my perch, that is what I see happening. Now, in terms of the president having made his case, he will have Tuesday to address the nation and give some additional intelligence. I don't sit on the intelligence committee, and I understand that there are some new photos that, that we'll be able to peruse with reference to things that actually happened with chemical weapons in Syria, and I'm looking forward to seeing those. I did go to the briefing on September 1st. As a matter of fact, I put everything aside. It just so happens it was my birthday. Everything aside so that I could make that briefing in Washington, D.C. So I've seen a good deal of the intelligence. More intelligence is being shared. We will go back to work on Monday in Washington, D.C. We didn't cease to work. We've been working here in the district. Mm-hmm. There is no break. There is a district work period that we have in the month of August, and we've been working with a good many constituents. But we'll go back on Monday, and we'll acquire additional intelligence. I believe that on votes of this type, you have to really give a lot of thought to it, and you've got to be careful what you say leading up to the vote, mm-hmm. because you don't know what the final resolution will be. The president sent one resolution to Congress, and it has been amended in the Senate to make it a little bit more forceful, if you will, and that will probably metamorphose into something else. Only God knows what the House will ultimately come up with, if indeed we come up with anything at all. So you have to wait to see what the final resolution is in my world before you commit to something. I learned this, by the way, the very hard way when we were dealing with the Affordable Care Act. People want to know whether you read that bill before you vote for it. So you want to make sure that you read these resolutions before you vote for them. Now, that's in my world. I understand that there may be other reasons for other members to do other things.
Okay, and so the word, as far as Congress goes, the decision has not been made, but callers have raised the point, and you know it's been in the media everywhere. Of 190 countries under the United Nations,
189.
Yeah. No one else seems to be...
France came on board, but they are now asking that we take it to the United Nations. After having come on board, they have started to equivocate, and they'd like to have the United Nations give consideration to it. Only a handful of members have absolutely committed to it. It's going to require a lot of debate, and I think members are going to be very careful about this decision because this is the kind of thing that will impact lives forever. And we're talking about the people who actually have to go there and fight.
Absolutely.
Have to be placed on the ground in Syria.
All right, that's going to have to end it there. Thank you so much, Congressman Al Green.
May I give my phone number?
Oh, by all means, please.
Okay. If you have a question concerning your photo identification, please call us at 713-383-9234. 713-383-9234. And if you'll just ask for assistance, I may not be there to answer the phone myself. So you might let someone in the office help you with it. And I say this because I've been warned a good many people will want to speak to me and me only. And I wish I could take every call, but I can't. I love you. Thank you.
All right. Well, Eugene, escort the congressman out, please. No, we got to get out of here. We're going to take a brief break.